Okay, let's talk to Jane Oates from Working Nation. Let's talk a little bit about jobs, manufacturing, and construction. Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi, John. Great. Great to be back with you.
I've always enjoyed your conversation, and it even seems like last time you and I spoke a little bit about the distinction between construction and manufacturing. As I recall, manufacturing wasn't up as much as construction was. We see plenty of construction throughout Chicagoland. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, let's start with the good news. The good news is construction, right? I mean, construction was up again this month, 34,000 jobs. That's good for people of all ages, but particularly young people looking to try it out. You know what I mean? And the other really good news is, you know, they give you the average wage per hour as part of the monthly numbers. And, you know, when you look year over year from last August to this August, general construction workers had $1.50 an hour raise. That's good news, right? I mean, that's, and I understand, you know, and I know your listeners are very sophisticated because they always ask good questions. There's a big difference. There's all kinds of construction jobs. This is, you know, this is an average. So you take residential, you take those big highway jobs that you see commercial. So I understand that some people make less, but some people make more. That's the average. That's a pretty, $38.36 right now is the average. That's pretty good.
Average pay for a construction job is $38.36. That's construction, as you described it. What about manufacturing?
Yeah. So manufacturing, and this is, you know, last month we talked about, it's just, you know, a big mystery to me. If people are building things, then somebody must be making the things they're building with, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that just seems logical. So why aren't we seeing an uptick in manufacturing jobs? Well, in fact, manufacturing in 2024 has been flat. We have, you know, little gains one month and then losses another month. The again, with every piece of bad news, there's a flip side of the coin. Manufacturing salaries went up this year. In there's two big differences in manufacturing. One is durable manufacturing. That's like furniture and cars, things that you don't buy all the time. And the other is non-durable, which is like clothes and food and things like that, things that you use up. But in durable manufacturing, the average salary right now is $36.21. In non-durable, it's still $30.83, both up, you know, over a dollar in both of those things. That's a great family-sustaining wage. You could you could really pay your bills on that.
I'm guessing that that does include benefits, that that's not the hourly wage, but that's also including contributions to retirement accounts or health insurance.
Now, you know, when they do it as hourly wage. But I'd never worked for BLS, so I'm not sure what goes in there. But I think it's pretty close to the average hourly wage.
Wow.
I mean, these folks are make. I mean, you figure that's a nice weekly salary. You know, that's somewhere just south of $1,500 a week.
We're talking with Jane Oates from Working Nation about the latest employment numbers. What else struck you about these the August report, Jane?
So I think I was, like everybody else, disappointed to see those revisions. You know, they revised June's number down by 61,000 jobs and July's number down by 25,000 jobs. So that paints a different, you know, a different picture. The three-month average right now is that we've only added 116,000 jobs a month. That's discouraging. As you see the difference between open jobs at 7.7 million and unemployed people at 7.1 million, really starting to close. So it's getting tighter and tighter to find a job. And then you add on to that, you know, if you're in an area with fewer opportunities, a more remote area, probably even tougher for you.
So that sounds like a somewhat pessimistic look at the economy right now. Overall, how do you feel about the economy?
Well, like you and I are probably in the same boat. We're hoping that the Federal Reserve, you know, does a cut. A nice cut, because I think part of the reason that we're seeing sluggish job growth is that these small businesses, who really are the engines of job creation. I mean, I love our big businesses, don't get me wrong, but these small businesses are the ones that go from 40 employees to 50 employees. They can't borrow the money, you know, to buy more supplies, to stock up, or to hire new people. So I'm hoping that with the rates coming down, and let's hope that happens soon, with the rates coming down, it'll be a little bit more affordable for those small business owners to borrow money. And quite frankly, you know, for families who are spending and really keeping this economy afloat and strong, that they get a little break on their credit card rates.
Speaking of businesses willing to borrow money to expand services or build more stuff, one of our guests this week said you used to see a lot more of the tall cranes, construction cranes, in Chicago than you do right now. There'd be new buildings going up or additions to buildings going up, and you had all of this construction. The skyline would not just be tall buildings, but those tall, towering cranes. And the guy said, I've only seen two in the Chicago area. And I thought about that as I was walking around yesterday. I actually spotted one of them, but I did not see the other one. I don't know where it is. It seems like we're still trying to fill the vacant space rather than build more space.
Yeah, I think commercial real estate is really sluggish. And, you know, many of them, we hear from the big lenders, many of them are going to have debt due this fall. And what's that going to do? Because, you know, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, and the commercial real estate occupancy rate here is the lowest it's been in the 20 years that I've lived here. And people in cities trying to scramble and say, what do we do with these vacant buildings? Because, as you say, the economy relies on new buildings going up. Those are jobs.
You know, the place I get my haircut downtown, I went there the other day, and the woman said we're being kicked out in the end of the month. And I said, why? And it's a commercial building, but there's so few tenants, they're turning it condo. So her business, her barber shop, her hair salon is going to have to find a new place. And she felt kind of sad about that. But I thought, well, if you own the building and you're sitting on empty space, maybe you ought to try that.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe you should think that it might be helpful to have certain kinds of tenants, you know, like a barber in your building. You know, that would make a building attractive for me to have some of those services right there, especially when winter comes and it gets a little chilly. You don't even have to walk across the street. So I think we're going to see lots of changes, John. I mean, people are going to do innovative things with those buildings. Some cities I've talked to are making, you know, dedicated senior housing where they can put services, you know, especially social services, in a building. Some places are really looking, as you say, to make them into condos. That's an expensive proposition. And other places are really looking at, could they be temporary places to house the awful growing number of homeless people?
Well, that was one of the issues that came up on a podcast we did this week, The Mincing Rascals. We talked about how many of the Chicago area schools have less than 50% occupancy of students. People value the neighborhood schools, but if we consolidated the schools, you'd more efficiently utilize that space, but then you would have some empty buildings. And I thought, well, I know who could fill those empty schools if you converted them into housing for the migrant population that we have here, if nothing else.
That's right.
Different subject. Let me just get your quick take on wages right now and inflation. The wages are outpacing inflation right now, right? Wage growth is better than the cost of living?
That's exactly right. You know, although I bet a lot of your listeners are saying, not in my house. You know what I mean? Gas is starting to come down little by little. I mean, here in this area, it's finally gone under $3 a gallon. That's the first time probably in a year. Food remains stubbornly expensive. You know, things that you, chicken and eggs and things like that have never gone back to their pre-COVID figures, and not quite sure why. So I think a lot of families, and of course rent, you know, rent and the mortgage rate, both hurting working families. So, but I definitely see a glimmer of hope. You know, you remember a few months ago we talked about this when inflation was stubbornly high. Now that it's coming down a little bit, I hope families get a little breathing room.
Do you think the Fed is going to lower rates more than twice this year?
Well, I'm hoping for a better than, you know, small cut this first time. I hope they do 0.5%. You know, that I have no insider knowledge. That's just really a hope. And I figure if I say it out loud enough times, maybe it'll be like Beetlejuice and it'll happen.
I don't know if that's how that works, but I will maybe offer this, that my guess was that the market already factored 25 basis points in, and if you wanted to see the needle move, you'd have to be more aggressive than that. My guess is, though, the Fed is going to do 25.
Well, let's hope, John. Let's hope they do. I'll hope for 50, you hope for 25, and anything is good, right? I mean, and begin it. Maybe they'll do 25 and then do another 25 later in the fall. But they've done, really, you have to give Jay Powell credit. I mean, what he said would happen has pretty much fallen into place, and I doubt it. I was a doubter in those early days. But, it's time, and maybe even a little past time. We've suffered enough. We need some relief.
We will have a recession someday, but we're not having one now, and we haven't. They've been calling for, or were calling for, a recession for a couple of years, and it looks like the soft landing has happened, right?
I think that's exactly right. I think we've got and we have such a great, stream of workers, even with our own declining and aging population. We're working longer. New immigrants are coming in to take the jobs that are open. I think it's a really good sign. I mean, if things continue even the way they are, with a tepid, average of 116 a month, I wanted to get a little higher than that. But I think we're on a good track. And then as this federal money, for construction and improvements, and the chip factories get built, maybe then we'll see a real push up in manufacturing. Maybe we'll see the chip revolution really impact manufacturing numbers in 2025.
Jay Notes is a senior policy advisor and recent president of WorkingNation.com. Jay, nice to talk to you today.
Always great to talk to you, John. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. A big doings in Chicago this weekend is the annual LitFest on Saturday and Sunday. Let's tell you a little bit about that. Amy Danzer is here, the program director at Printers Row LitFest. Amy, a lot of poets in town this weekend, huh?
A lot of poets. We've got our headliner, Tracy K. Smith, who is a U.S. Poet Laureate and Pulitzer Prize winner. And she also just last night was honored with the Harold Washington Literary Award. So she's going to be on our Feinberg stage, our Joseph and Bessie Feinberg Foundation stage, on Saturday morning at 11:15 in conversation with Donna Seaman. Later that afternoon, we'll also have Rita Duff, also a U.S. Poet Laureate, Pulitzer Prize winner. She's just incredible. And she's traveled into town with her husband, Fred, and they'll be on the stage, I think, around 1:30. So we also have Jazz Showcase partnering with us this year, and we have a bilingual Latinx poetry reading scheduled for Saturday afternoon at 4:30, which will be a really fun time because people can also maybe have a beverage and enjoy the show. And it's not age restricted, and all of our programs are free and open to the public. So, yeah.
For folks who haven't done this before, where and how do you do LitFest?
How do you do it? So basically the entire weekend, Saturday to Sunday, 10 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, we transform five blocks in the Printers Row neighborhood into a literary wonderland. So there are about 200-something exhibitors lining the streets. Booksellers, authors, publishers, literary organizations. So people can just kind of browse books, network with publishers and meet new authors. There's also programming, which I'm in charge of. And so throughout the entire weekend, we've got stages that are just, program after program. We have 75 plus programs, over 200 presenters, including, best-selling authors, as well as emerging voices, so young writers, and an opportunity a fiction writing contest, a flash fiction writing contest. So, and there's so many cute little spots in that neighborhood too to grab a coffee or a glass of wine. So it's fun to meet up with a friend there, maybe see a program, and then debrief after with a little snack.
It's fun. You'll have good weather. You've got a great show, it sounds like, planned this year, a series of events. Is there a theme usually? So, for instance, four Poet Laureates, Pulitzer Prize winner. Do you sometimes go down a certain lane, or is it kind of a mishmash?
It is a mishmash, I would say. I mean, I think that it's definitely a reflection of our times, like whatever kind of programming we have. Like, this is an election year, so I think that we have a lot more like nonfiction topical discussions than we typically have. So there's that, there's just something for everyone. We've got programming on sports, like literary journalism, sports journalism, children programming. We have a little storybook parade that we're hosting first thing in the morning tomorrow. It's just, there's a little something for everyone.
For those who didn't read Mike Royko when he was first writing, that is, when he was alive, it seems like his writing lives on. But there's actually going to be a discussion about the work of Mike Royko, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the beloved Rick Kogan is going to be moderating that discussion with Mitchell Bishop, who has a show that he wrote and is performing in. I think it starts this weekend. It's opening weekend. So we're featuring him, as well as Bill Savage, professor from Northwestern, but also the curator of the exhibit, of an exhibit that's at the Newberry Library right now, featuring Mike Royko's work. And then Judy Royko, his wife. She'll also be on that program. In addition to Chicago literary legends, we're also going to be featuring a program focused on Gwendolyn Brooks and the book that made her a Pulitzer Prize winner. And so her daughter, and that book, by the way, is Annie Allen, which is going to be reissued, republished. And her daughter, Nora Brooks Blakely, is going to be on that panel discussion with Reg Gibbons. It's going to be an excellent, excellent program. So I definitely recommend those two, the one on Royko and Brooks.
Since we're thinking about books, I will just remind myself and our listeners that at WGNRadio.com, the latest installment of our book club, the books that we are reading with short reviews and recommendations from many of us here at WGN or at WGNRadio.com. So I think we're all thinking about the same thing. The love of reading is reading up or down? Is hardback? Is it? Can you just talk about the business of writing and reading and how people are consuming it, either on a Kindle or in a hardback? What's the environment like for writers and readers these days?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. you got an hour? I feel like, you know, I heard somewhere that there are like 300,000 new books published every year in the United States. So the publishing industry is definitely alive and you know, booming to this day, which is that's exciting for authors and readers alike. I feel like there are so many different modalities these days. I think that's very interesting. I feel like even like so many people listen to books, you know, Audible books. And so I think sometimes people even feel uncomfortable saying that they read a book if they listen to it, you know. But that's still a way of taking in a book. It totally counts.
Oh, it's not a compromise. I have someone very near and dear to my heart who almost apologizes for listening to a book. And I said, you consumed a book. I don't know that it matters if it's the eyes or the ears. No. Sometimes hearing a voice that's a good reader is another layer of communicating the book, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's nice to have both available to you. You know, if you want to take, you know, a physical hard copy book into the bathtub and not worry about, you know, apparatus getting wet.
Yes, yes, you know, yes. Well, let's close with this. The weekend book fair called Lit Fest attracts over 100,000 visitors annually. You can sure be one of them this weekend, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. tomorrow. And then Sunday, September 8th, it's in the Printer's Row Historic District, downtown Chicago. By the way, do I pay to go or do I just stroll the streets?
You just stroll the streets. The entire weekend is free and open to the public. No registration is necessary. So, yeah, just wander, enjoy.
PrintersRowLitFest.org. Amy Danzer, Program Director. Good job, Amy. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Okay, more business news now. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Frequent flyer programs of the top four U.S. airlines, including Chicago's United Airlines, are being investigated. The Department of Transportation has launched the probe to determine whether the programs involved deceptive or anti-competitive practices by the airlines. The investigation will also look into programs at American, Delta, and Southwest. The Department of Transportation has ordered the airlines to submit records about their rewards programs, which generate billions of dollars annually for the carriers. The feds also want to see any customer complaints received by those airlines. In some cases, the rewards programs generate more revenue than flight operations. The programs encompass credit card, consumer incentive, loyalty, and frequent flyer programs. American Airlines says it will launch flights from Chicago to Madrid next year. The carrier will begin daily flights to Madrid starting March 30th. American is the second largest carrier at O'Hare behind United and has been beefing up its schedule. It'll have 10 daily flights to Europe next summer. It's American's largest ever transatlantic schedule from O'Hare. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday with our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell. And I've got another tomato question for you, Jim, if you care to start with that.
Ask me a question, I'll answer it.
Well, I will, after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today, and every day, for that matter. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Mr. Fizz, several people have been asking about those damn squirrels, as one person put it, who seem to be waiting until just before the tomatoes are ripe before they take a big bite out of them. What do we do?
Oh, boy. Actually, there's no way that you can screen them out unless you put the tomatoes in a cage with the holes too small for the squirrels to get through. But you can trap the squirrels. That's one way that we do it. There's a trap called Have a Heart. Or the other thing to do, they will not attack a tomato unless it gets pretty nearly ripe. Pick your tomatoes when they're pink. Bring them indoors, wrap them in newspaper, put them in a place where you can see when they ripen. They will ripen whether it's connected to the plant or not.
Oh, I like that idea. Pick the tomatoes before the squirrels can get to them. Okay, what else is on your mind, sir?
Well, we're in meteorological fall. It felt like it last week. And astronomical fall starts the September 22nd, I believe, this year. One of the things I like to do this time of year is take the old annuals out that are spent, replace them with mums or icicle pansies or asters or flowering kale, some stuff that will tolerate a little bit of frost and will make the border look very nice for the remainder of the season until the snow flies. Then there's something that needs to be done at this time of year, planting spring flowering bulbs. They have to be planted now because they have to go through a cold period before they will come up in spring and they'll flower. Location is kind of important. You need to put them in a place where they're pretty well in full sun, but more important is where they have good drainage. You don't want them to rot off because the ground is too wet. Now, next spring, you're going to really be glad that you took the time to plant bulbs because that's the time we really enjoy them. And if they're not there, we miss something early in the spring.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell. Thank you, sir.
Good talking to you, Steve.
It's a big day on the food calendar. It's National Food Bank Day, and we have some great ones doing important work in the Chicago area. And it's also National Coffee Ice Cream Day and National Chianti Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
There is a climate tech conference coming to Chicago in about 10 days. Chris Gladwin is the CEO of Ocient and a board member and chair at P33. Chris, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here. A lot going on in climate in Chicago.
Why do you say that?
Well, Chicago Climate Tech Week is coming up the week after next. And what you have is the, you know, business leaders, university leaders, civic leaders, and lots of people just involved in the technology of climate and addressing that because it really is starting to affect, you know, our everyday lives. So there's going to be a lot of great events coming up. There's a couple free ones. One called Resilient Futures and Tech Horizons on Wednesday, September 18th, and another one called the STEMFest Clean Energy Career and Community Summit. And these are going to be really great ways to kind of learn about what's going on in climate and get involved.
Is this then open to the public or is this for industry insiders?
Well, it's definitely open to the public, but I think what you're going to find there is a lot of the industry insiders and leaders will be there. You know, talking with each other, talking with people who are just interested in what's going on. So, for example, at the STEMFest Clean Energy Career and Community Summit, if you go, you'll get to hear from experts on microgrids and fleets and infrastructure and workforce development and all kinds of exciting stuff.
So are these maybe people talking about how to keep the climate from overheating, or ways that technology can assist us in that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, unfortunately, the reality is that climate change has begun, and it is having an impact, and that impact will grow. So part of, you know, what a lot of different organizations are working on is how to minimize the bad changes that are going on, but also there's just the reality that
right.
businesses and people are going to have to deal with this, and how do they make the, you know, the best of that changing situation.
Is there an example you can give us of either technology on a small level or maybe something done macro-wise to manage the climate?
Sure. So my software company, Ocean, is a company that makes software for the largest and most power-consuming data analytics systems. And, you know, what we've been demonstrating is that using our software, we can reduce the energy consumption of a system that analyzes information by up to 90%. And that's a really big deal. We're going to have to make those kind of changes, because without improving efficiency, the demand for energy just keeps going up and up for data centers and computing, but the supply just can't keep going up and up. So we're going to have to get more efficient.
That's the bane of AI, isn't it? It eats up energy, doesn't it?
AI, many of the aspects of AI are currently very energy consuming and growing. What I think you're seeing in the industry now is kind of the first generation of technology that came out was a rush to do the amazing things that AI can do as quickly as possible. What you're going to see in version 2 and version 3 and version 4 is, yeah, let's do that amazing stuff, but let's do that in a much more energy efficient way.
And are you speaking about something beyond just throwing up solar panels, for instance? Are you talking about software that actually minimizes the amount of electricity needed?
Yeah, you know, I moved to Chicago in 1991 to work for Zenith Data Systems up in Buffalo Grove. And at the time, that was the largest portable PC maker in the world. And that was really the first time that people could use computing devices mobile on a battery without a wire and carry them around. And I remember being involved in kind of the first generation of how do we make the use of energy in a laptop computer much more efficient so that the battery lasts a long time. The same thing's happening now in data center energy use. Is that up till now, the primary focus hasn't been energy efficiency, but now it is. And so all those engineers and all those companies are figuring out how to do that, how to make those things more efficient. And, you know, at Ocean, we've already been able to reduce power by 90%, and we have another 90% in development. So there's a lot of opportunity to really, really get more efficient, because there's just no way we can generate enough power without getting enough efficient. And without getting more efficient.
Yeah. Do electric cars figure into this at all? Are EVs part of this equation?
Yeah, definitely. Another challenge for the energy industry is, as we shift to more and more use of electric cars, that's a giant growth in demand for energy. So all this is, you know, kind of stacking on top of each other, where we've got to get more efficient for electric cars, we've got to get more efficient for computing, and we still got to do all the things that energy does. And so that's a big challenge. And you'll see at Chicago Climate Tech Week, which is September 16th through 20th, is in Chicago and in Illinois, we have as much going on as anywhere in the world. Chicago really is a leader in climate technology. And those leaders are going to be, you know, at this conference showing the different ways they're doing it and building relationships so they can get even more efficient and do even more in climate coming years.
This is the second annual Chicago Climate Tech Week. It's September 16th through the 20th. Venues throughout the city, including IIT, the 1871 Complex, and M-Hub. If I want to see the rundown or find out more, where do I go?
Yeah, best thing to do is just Google Chicago Climate Tech Week, and you'll see all kinds of links from all the different organizations who are participating.
Really interesting, Chris. I'm glad you're doing this. Chris Gladwin is the CEO of Ocean and a board member and chair at P33. Nice to talk to you, Chris. Good luck.
Hey, it was a real pleasure. Thanks so much.